This is Average Joe Finances Podcast, episode 19.
The number one death of a partnership, because I've seen it too many times, just through like the little bit of consulting that I've done with some small businesses, is when you get into the tit for tat. So if you're thinking about joining a partnership with anybody, you have to, you personally have to mentally prepare to not hold that scorecard. And you have to have a conversation with the other person to make sure that they're willing to not do it either. Because if you get into the game of, well, I returned that phone call and I met that person, but you didn't do this and I did that, then you're dead.
Welcome to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Are you trying to get out of debt, invest, or just not sure where to start? Then this is the place for you. We discuss different ways to get out of the rat race and build your wealth. Join us on this wild ride to financial freedom.
Hey, if you're watching this video on YouTube, be sure to smash that like button and click subscribe. Also, if you're listening to this as a podcast, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss out on our newest episodes. Be sure to check us out on all of our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, and LinkedIn. All the links are in the description below. All right, so in today's episode, I was talking with Eric Engbertson. And what we talked about is how he had been a loan officer for 10 years, still is, and how he manages two real estate portfolios, both that are 50-50 in short-term and traditional rental properties. So this is a pretty good episode. I really think that for those of you that are looking into doing some of the short-term rentals as well as traditional, this will be a good listen for you. Now, when I talk about short-term rentals, we're not talking about Airbnb. We're talking about month-to-month rental properties, and he's going to talk about his success with that. So check it out. I really hope you guys enjoy it, and still growing the mustache for Movember, so you get to enjoy that too, but it won't be in the episode. All right. Hey, how's it going, everybody? So today we have Eric Engbertson, and he's the founder and CEO of EME Companies. Eric is an entrepreneur, real estate investor, and expert in real estate finance. He's been investing in real estate since the age of 18, and he owns and manages two real estate portfolios. Both are 50-50 mix of short-term furnished and traditional buy-and-hold rentals. Eric is also part owner and CFO for Guild Dream Homes, which is a fix-and-flip business. Along with being a full-time real estate investor, he also has worked as a mortgage broker, banker, and loan officer for 10 years. So Eric has a bachelor's degree in finance, and he's minored in accounting, and he's a loan officer, and he's assisted many first-time home buyers. All right, so through all these interactions, he's learned the themes of what it makes or doesn't make to make people financially successful. So Eric, really excited to have you on the show. Your bio is like right up my alley. Definitely excited to get this started. So to start things off, I gave a little intro and a small bit of information about you with the bio that you sent me, but can you tell me a little bit about yourself and share your story with us?
Yeah, absolutely. First, I want to say thank you so much for having me on. And I know you're in the military, so thank you very much for your service. Thanks. Have some military members in my family as well, and have the utmost respect for anybody that that serves. So thank you very much for that. So a little bit about me. I've been an entrepreneur since high school. When I was in high school, I was always trying to figure out ways to save money and things. And then one day in homeroom, I had a somebody that I kind of knew, but we were just in homeroom together, and he was like, "Hey, who wants to make some money?" And I was like, I like money. And so we started a landscape company together, and we ran that for 10 years. And so that was my first kind of dip into entrepreneurship. And then we sold that business and got into real estate. And ever since then, I've been doing real estate. He's the other owner on Guild Dream Homes. So we started that business together. That business is a fix and flip business. It also owns a small portfolio of rentals. And then after college, along with doing that, got into the mortgage business back in 2010. Started as a banker at Wells Fargo. That was the most miserable job that I've ever had. And so I was actively trying to leave that job. And then a gentleman that asked me to come and join his team as a mortgage banker with Wells Fargo. So I spent 7 years there, then 3 years now on the correspondent side with a lender, Fairway Independent Mortgage Company. So that's my day job, if you will. And then about 3 years ago, started a family real estate business that just me and my wife run. That's also portfolio of rentals, small portfolio of rentals that's 50-50 long-term and short-term rentals. So that's kind of, you know, me in a nutshell, really focused on real estate, but also kind of all things finance and especially personal finance and entrepreneurship in general. You know, I kind of always lean towards anything entrepreneurship, and also a father of two, have two young kids. My daughter's almost three and my son is 8 months old. So, so that's kind of me in a nutshell, man.
Awesome. Hey, thank you, Eric. So I definitely know what it's like to be doing a bunch of stuff with two young kids. Definitely not easy. Mine are 11 and 9 now. So I have two daughters. That it definitely changes the game. No matter what you're doing in life, having children changes everything, right?
Yes.
So I want to talk a little bit about your family real estate business that you started, right? So you said it's 50-50, you know, regular rental properties, and the other 50% is short-term rental properties. So I'm curious, you know, the fact that you diversified it that way and split it up has probably protected you quite a bit with everything that's going on with the pandemic, right? Because I know a lot of short-term rentals, they got hit pretty bad, and they're really hurting right now. Can you tell me, have you noticed a big benefit to the fact that you split up that portfolio 50-50? Did that help you during this time?
Yeah. So, that was the theory behind it, right? There's two aspects of it that I gravitate towards, we gravitated towards with splitting up the model is, you know, there's benefits of the long-term rentals, just a standard, you know, rental on a 12-24 month lease, is you kind of sign that lease and then they maintain the property and you don't have to think about it, as long as, you know, your standard checks, quarterly check-ins and stuff to make sure they're not destroying the place. But for the most part, it's very passive once they take over the lease. Whereas the short-term rentals, I like to call them extended stays, because they're not like vacation rentals. They are furnished homes in desirable areas. And I live in Georgia, and so all our rentals are here in Georgia. And so they're more like people in between homes. They sold a home and they're waiting for a house to be built, or they're moving to the area and they're going to stay for anywhere from, you know, 2 weeks to 6 months. It just kind of depends on the situation, but you don't get the move in, move out. But to your direct question about how it impacted us during the pandemic. So as the pandemic began to hit and I kind of realized what this could possibly become, quite frankly, it was very scary initially. And I'm sitting there looking at, okay, where are we at cash position wise? How long can we go empty? Because I was kind of convinced initially that we were going to end up totally empty across the board. But yes, it was originally designed to help diversify the portfolio, that if you had a unit that went empty, you had the short-term gains, because you also make more money on the short-term when there, you know, if you don't have vacancy, but you obviously have more turnover. We were surprisingly, maybe not unscathed. We did drop rents for our long-term tenants, by about 20%, for 3 months at the beginning of the pandemic, but the short-term rentals stayed very surprisingly full. We had very little vacancy across the board, which I was surprised at. You know, we had a lot of people who we had two couples that left New York that were, you know, they came down here, they had family down here and they came for a month and rented. And so ended up being very well. I have some friends that are in the vacation rental business where it's more just rent a weekend, rent a week. And they took a much harder hit as maybe initially, but then there was like this boom that came out in May. It was like the end of May and my wife's birthday is on June 1st. And so we were like, well, let's go to the beach for a week. And we rented this house and it had, I'm telling you, we looked the second week in May, we rent this house the first week in June. And it was vacant for the whole summer. By the time we left, Lauren was curious about, she was like, well, maybe we should stay another week, you know, 'cause I'm working from home, and she pulls up the calendar and it's booked through September. So it was like this empty void. And then I think there was just a rush as everybody was like, I got to get the hell out of my house. Let me out. And so I think it's kind of interesting where you had this short-term dip from talking with some of my friends that are in that business. And then it kind of came back with a roar. So it's, you know, I think also people kept waiting for real estate to take some sort of gross net, you know, negative turn, and it never came, or it hasn't come yet, I guess is the better way to put it. And I personally don't think it'll come. We can get into that as well as we move. But yes, that's to, you know, I know I beat around the bush on your question here, but you know, the idea is to split it up so that if one sector is not doing well, the other one will carry it.
Yeah. So I guess I misinterpreted. I thought you were doing vacation rentals. So that's fantastic. So you're doing like you know, month to month type deals, right?
So yeah,
for your short term and.
Yeah. Anywhere from we occasionally we'll get a weekend, but for the most part it's priced. Like the way it's priced is it encourages month stays or at least 2 week stays. You know, think it's kind of filling the niche of, at least here in Georgia, the extended stay hotels are, you know, you don't want to be there unless you have to be there.
Right.
And so it kind of fills that void for people. Again, you know, a lot of people who are, they've sold a home and now they're waiting on the builder to finish their house. We get a lot of that. People moving to the area that, you know, we have a doctor that's staying in one of the units right now. His family's going to come in January. So he did a 6 month lease. But it's all furnished turnkey, just like a vacation rental, just not the vacation side.
Right.
Of it.
Right.
So yeah, it's a kind of a cool niche that I think there's a lot of opportunity, certainly here in Georgia, but probably in other places as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's not something you really hear about too much. You know, when it comes to short-term rentals is people just having fully furnished properties for, you know, this couple weeks or month to month leasing options. Right. I'm not sure if the Hawaii laws that we have here, you know, so we have a vacation rental, specific vacation rental laws that yeah. prohibit, you know, many homes out here from, you know, putting their places up on Airbnb or VRBO and things like that. So I'm curious if you were to do it as a month to month thing, you know, renting out a fully furnished place out here in Hawaii, I'm pretty sure there's some good appetite for that with, you know, with people coming out here and they want to, you know, have a longer stay, especially as we just started to open the state earlier this week. I think on Thursdays when we opened it back up to tourism. And cool. I think we're going to start seeing people, they want to come out here and just get away for like a month to 2 months. Like they don't want to do the, I want to go on a 2 week vacay. Like I want to get away for a while. So anybody that's out here in Hawaii that has some short-term rentals like that might be sitting pretty good here in the upcoming months.
Yeah, well, and I would encourage people to look at that because Georgia as a state has not passed any laws against vacation rentals or you know, these extended stays, which is where the business that we're in, but individual cities have. So like Lake Lanier is a big lake that's just north of the city, and that's Forsyth County. And so Forsyth County passed a law against the short-term rentals because the homeowners didn't want, you know, people partying at houses and stuff. But all of the counties that there's two or three counties that have passed laws, Savannah County, which is the city of Savannah, and then Forsyth County, which is the lake. And then the city of Atlanta has some laws, but it's mostly they just want to get their tax revenue, you know, similar to the hotels. But they all define it as stays less than 2 weeks for the most part, at least here in Georgia. So, you know, obviously every state's different, but I would encourage people to look at that because, you know, every time I talk to somebody about it, that's kind of one of the first things that comes up is, well, are you concerned about changing laws? And honestly, as of right now, I'm not, because for the most part, we don't fall into that bucket. It's no different than you renting an apartment month to month. The only difference is it's furnished.
That's awesome. I mean, that's just another, like you said, it's a niche that's mostly untapped. If you look at it that way, especially in the market where you're at, it sounds like down there in Georgia that you're on top of the game for this right now. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And when you go down the list of the opportunities for people to rent a place like that, if you just spend 10 minutes thinking about it, there's so many people that need that short-term housing that I do think it's an untapped opportunity for a lot of people in a lot of places.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Not just Georgia. Right. So
yeah. Not just Georgia.
So that's fantastic. So I was being a little selfish and I wanted to talk immediately about the first thing that pointed out that you were talking about in your description, right, when you were sharing your short story.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, me being selfish, I wanted to go right into the real estate and the rentals, the 50-50, right? But I want to rewind back because we had some specific topics we wanted to discuss today. And one of them was your entrepreneurship, right? And right out the gate, you talked about how when you were in high school, you started this landscape business with your friend, right? And you said you ran that for 10 years before you sold it and got into real estate. So can you like rewind us back to the beginning and just tell me how that started in school? Like, did he just come up to you at lunch and said, "Hey man," well, you said he's like, "Hey, who wants to make money?" And you jumped in. Yeah. So how did that, play out?
Absolutely. Yeah. So he, it was his business. And he'd been operating it since he was a very young kid, just cutting the neighbor's grass and stuff. And when it came time, we all turned 16. And so we're all, trying to get cars and save money and stuff. And he had a Mustang. And so that wasn't, I think it was a Mustang or maybe it was like a Honda Accord. I can't remember. He had a small sedan and he, wasn't conducive to like trying to take lawn equipment to other neighborhoods than just the one. So he had built up like 7 or 8 lawns in his mom's neighborhood that he cut. And he was getting inquiries from another neighborhood, actually where his dad lived. And my dad, when I turned 16, he got an old truck for me to drive, but also to tow his boat. And so I drove around a truck. And so he was like, the real question he asked was, who has a truck and wants to make some money?
There
and
you
I
go.
Was like, I have a truck and I want to make some money. And so then
you provide value to him. So
exactly. So then, after helping him out for a little bit of time, I was like, you know what, man, like I got the truck, you got all the equipment and the accounts, like let's start a business and be 50-50 partners. And up until that point, we had known each other through middle school and high school in homeroom, but we're never really that close of friends. And now we're very good friends and known each other for a very, very long time. But that's how it all started. And we grew it. And for the first, 3 years, it was just me and him out cutting grass and trying to grow it. And then when we got to college, it was like, I don't know how much I like getting poison ivy and out cutting grass. So then we kind of grew a crew and hired a manager. And then we were more on like the marketing customer service side, trying to build it up, and then got to a certain place. And then that's actually, we used the income from that business to help us buy our first rental property. So I bought our first rental property. We house hacked a house right off campus, bought a 5-bedroom house, rented it to 3 other guys, which paid the cost of the house. So we lived for free.
So you rented out the rooms?
Yeah, so we rented it room by room. So it was a 5-bedroom house. He took the master upstairs. There was a basement that we kind of, maybe not renovated, but we've like put in a wall to make it like a secondary master. So I lived in the basement, and then the other 3 bedrooms we rented out, I think for like $500 a month, and that covered the mortgage. And then we all split utilities. So we lived there for utilities for 3 years, and continued to operate the landscape business. And then after college was over, we tried to scale the landscape business by removing us a little bit out. And, I don't think we gave it enough time. Honestly, I look back at that and I wish we'd have stuck with it a little bit longer, but ultimately we just decided to sell it. So we sold it and then bought a couple rentals with it and then started flipping homes. And that's how Guild Dream Homes came about. And so still, run that business together. So that's kind of the story on that. As far as like just general entrepreneurship, that's, running that business and then starting Guild Dream Homes with the real estate side is kind of always been my niche. But then even as a mortgage or as a loan officer, or as a mortgage banker, I gravitated to that because it's commission only. So I'm a big fan of like making your own destiny and not having to, worry about, well, not necessarily worry about, but don't ever cap yourself. Right. And so I think a lot of people will sometimes settle on that. So entrepreneurship, I think everyone thinks of like trying to create some massive business and that type of alley. But I think it can also fit in a niche where you just give yourself the untapped opportunity and flexibility to kind of do different things that you want to do.
I love how you started off with this landscaping business. You took the capital, the profits that you made from that business to buy your first property, right? That you house hacked. And
yep.
That's something that a lot more people are doing nowadays is, buying a property, renting out either the rooms or renting out, like if they buy a duplex or, small multifamily, renting out the other units and essentially living for free. And
Yep.
One of the things I try to tell some of my younger listeners that are just starting off on this road and they're wondering how to get into real estate, the very first thing you should do is 100% house hack. You know, you did it while you were going to college. So, I mean, that's perfect. So you're essentially, you know, you have somewhere to live for free while you're going to school. I mean, just a very great way to run things. So now you said you had the landscaping business for 10 years and then you sold it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you sold that and then started the Guild Family Dream Homes.
Yeah.
And now the other thing you do, so you do have a, I guess, quote unquote, 9-to-5, even though it's not really a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
Just being a loan officer, right? So can you talk to me a little bit about that? Because you probably have a little more insight, you know, being a loan officer now. So you've got both sides of the real estate coin here, right? One is an investor and then the other as a lender, right? So when you're dealing with other investors, you probably have a better idea of what they're dealing with, what, you know, and where they're coming from, especially when they're trying to prove their income and other finances to get approved for a loan. Because a lot of times the folks that aren't W-2 workers, right? The W-9 guys are the ones that have a hard time trying to prove their income. So do you take all of that into account when you're looking at these loans?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I've been a loan officer for a little over 10 years. And yeah, it's definitely not a 9-to-5. It's more like a 24 hours, my wife would say. I kind of break it. I'm going to answer your question, I promise. I know I get off topic a lot, but, I break my personal finances into being a loan officer. And for a long time, my wife was a school teacher. That was our, pay for our lifestyle and our cost of living and things like that. And funding retirement and stuff, but then the real estate was all the wealth building side. And so for the most part, don't really drive a lot of cash flow out of the real estate, roll everything back in on the real estate side. And so that's kind of how I've always structured things, at least, you know, personally. So over 10 years, you learned a ton about real estate finance, which has helped me grow the portfolio as well to kind of find different ways to create creative financing. Especially in the fix and flip business, which is you're constantly looking for creative financing in that world. And so it's helped me there. And then to answer your question as well, yes, I do help a lot of investors because I can see it from their point of view and kind of understand their goals. It's not just getting one loan. It's okay, if I get this one loan and I structure it this way, then later on down the road, I can refinance and use that money to do XYZ. And so there's a bunch of different facets to look at. Over 10 years, I've become, I would say, an expert of looking at tax returns and things like that and helping people structure their finances in a way to maximize their goals. And back to what you were saying about your young listeners, especially your military listeners, if you don't own a home and you're in the military, you need to look at getting a VA loan and house hack. It's such low-hanging fruit.
Absolutely.
With rates where they are right now, I mean, a VA loan on a person on your primary residence is probably like in the mid twos, and it's really a no-brainer. You know, you buy, here in Georgia, we have a lot of ranches with basements, and I tell people this all the time: buy a ranch with a basement and convert the basement to an apartment and rent the apartment out. It doesn't have to be a shared space roommate situation. You can set it up in such a way to where you have no shared space. And then from there, you got the super cheap financing that even when you get, let's say, restationed somewhere else or you get out of the military and you don't want to live in that house anymore, then just you can keep it as a duplex and you got the super cheap financing on it. Definitely low hanging fruit on that. And, as a loan officer, me and my team help anywhere from about 100 to 150 people a year. You buy a home and I would say more. I'm very passionate about real estate, but probably the thing that I'm the most passionate about is the loan officer side. That's why I love doing it, is being able to help people accomplish their financial goals, but through, for most people, their largest asset, which is their home, and being able to do it in such a way that they can accomplish their goals.
I want to piggyback on the VA loan, right? So just for context here, when I first bought my home out here in Hawaii a little over 2 years ago, the interest rate was 4.65%.
Yeah. It's a good rate historically.
Right. Historically. Yeah. So My first home I bought was 6% back when I was 22. So this home, you know, it was 4.65%. And I refinanced it back in March, right when the, you know, pandemic was starting to pick up. And yeah. I saw that the rates had dropped drastically. And the lender I went through was actually offering a $10,000 credit if you refinance. So I said, yep. So I refinanced and got 2.75. And my mortgage went down $974 a month, which was phenomenal.
Yes, that's unbelievable.
Now I'm looking at, I might actually do it again to do a cash out refinance to pull some equity out of my house to drop it down to 2.25 and still keep my mortgage payment the same, because I'm looking to pull some equity out to go invest in more real estate. So here's the other thing about the market out here in Hawaii. The homes out here appreciate like crazy. So my home value has already gone up significantly to the point where I have literally over $200,000 of equity in my home right now. It's insane. So I definitely want to pull some of that out. Not all of it, obviously, but pull some of it out to keep my mortgage about the same and go invest that. So it's definitely the VA loan has some fantastic advantages to it. I even took a seminar. So shortly after I got my real estate license, they showed me, hey, there's this VA home loan seminar you should take. Trust me, you'll learn more than you already know about the VA loan. I said, that's impossible. I know all about the VA loan. There's nothing you can teach me. Well, I've actually got 3.5 pages of notes that I took from that seminar from all the stuff that I learned. And it's phenomenal when you, so for veterans and active duty folks, when you're working with a lender that really knows what they're talking about with the VA loan, there's so much you can do. You can even, you know, buy a fixer upper now, you know, and use your VA loan to even pull out money for repairs and just renovations that you're going to do on that home. And a lot of people don't know that. So they do look at, you know, after repair value. So it's really fascinating the different things you can do. So I definitely appreciate you bringing that up, because yes, a lot of my listeners are military.
Well, and even if you're not military, it's not quite as good of a deal, right? It's not 100% financing, not no MI, but there are options for conventional loans on the renovation side too, or the, renovation loans, which that, I mean, that's a beautiful product. I had a first time home buyer. He was probably 23 years old, started his first job as a project manager for a construction company. And he did exactly what we were talking about. He bought, and here in Georgia, especially around the city of Atlanta, the metro area, we're seeing the same appreciation. We're at like 2 months inventory. I mean, it's crazy. Anything under $300,000 is going multiple offers. And so prices just continue to push up. I think we're up like 4.8% already year over year. But anyways, he got a renovation loan, bought a dated ranch, totally updated the upstairs where he was going to live. So he loves it because he's in this beautiful new renovated home. And then he put a full apartment with like a laundry room, everything in the basement, and he rents it. He makes $400 a month to live in his house after utilities. So he lives in a brand new renovated space on the top end, rents the basement for like $2,000 a month, I think, and makes $400 a month. So just huge opportunity on the conventional side, if you're not active duty or a veteran, but certainly if you're active duty or veteran, I mean, those are the best loans there are.
Yeah. I mean, it's not bad living for free or getting paid to live in your own home. I mean,
not bad at all.
You can't beat that. That's a pretty good deal if you ask me.
Yeah, so, I agree.
For all the folks that are out there that are trying to weigh the options of renting versus buying, think about that, right?
Think about that. Yeah. So. I mean, especially with rates. So this was a conversation I was having with my wife earlier, actually today. So we're in the process of buying a house, buying another property. And this will be our first step into the vacation rental market. So we're buying a cabin up in North Georgia that will ultimately rent out primarily as an investment. And then if there's any empty weekends, maybe we'll pop up there and use it. But I was telling her, we're borrowing as a second home, 10% down at 2.5%. I mean, it's when you start to like really think about how cheap that money is. Like, could rates go down? Like, maybe, sure. I never thought that we'd ever be as low as we are. But, you know, I don't know if we'll, I mean, obviously there's a point where you will sell a home, but when you start to think about it, like, why would I ever want to pay that house off? If I can, to your point where you're like, I'm going to pull some cash out or consider it and borrow it 2.25. yeah, why would you ever want to pay that house off? Like, if you can't invest your money and make better than 2.25%, then, you know, you may want to just change your
change
risk
your strategy a little bit.
Change your strategy, right? Yeah. Get a coach or something. So, yeah, I mean, when you start to think about the opportunity that sits out there with rates, especially if you're young and you can get into some of these first-time home buyer products, huge opportunity out there. And even if you're not, even if you're just somebody that owns a home, never even thought about real estate, you know, you don't have to own a portfolio of 10 or 20 or 50 properties. You can just buy one, use it, you know, somewhat as a second home, but rent it out and borrow at dirt cheap rates. I mean, they're just huge opportunities in real estate. And I think that's why we're seeing all this demand. You know, now what happens when rates go up? I don't know, but you know, but if you can lock in 30-year money at 2.5% or 2.25% in your instance, I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer in my head.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you asked the question, what's going to happen when the rates go back up? Well,
yeah,
probably property values are probably going to come down. So just to be realistic about the situation that we might have in the future, you know, so we don't repeat 2008 and 2009, people need to keep that in mind, right? So once this pandemic's over and we recover, right? And who knows? I mean, we might keep it this way for years. I know the chairman was saying that we should, you know, keep rates like this until 2023, because moving it back drastically can really hurt a lot of people and cause the market to crash, you know, cause the housing market to crash. So it's just something that everybody should just keep in the back of their head, you know, be safe with your investments, be safe with what you're doing. But at the same time, you do have to take a little risk, right?
Yeah.
So the way I look at it is, if I refinance my home to pull this equity out and my home was to drop significantly in value, I'm not going to go under because I can still afford that mortgage payment. Right.
Yeah.
So, that's, you know, don't bite off more than you can chew. Just because things look great right now, just don't bite off more than you can chew. Just crunch the numbers. Just make sure that in the future, that no matter what, even if things were to drop, you still have the, you know, the cash flow, you know, or your income from your W-2 job to be able to cover everything, you know, if stuff hits the fan.
Yeah. Well, I think, so there's two things that I'll comment on that. And you absolutely are spot on. It's important to know your hold period when it comes to real estate, right? Because if your hold period is 10 to 20 years, then it's similar to a conversation that financial advisors have with people on their retirement accounts, is you got to put your blinders on and focus on your strategy. Because if you're going to hold a piece of property for 20 years, you don't care if it falls 30%. As long as you can rent it. So the most important thing is that you're buying property in desirable areas that you are confident on the rental side, and don't buy a property that you're going to lose $100 a month on because you think it's going to appreciate in value. Don't do that, right? Buy a property that you know is going to cash flow, that's going to pay for itself, and even if you were to see rents fall 10 or 20%, that you could absorb it. And then, yeah, I mean, you also want to, you know, make sure that you're putting money aside, that you're funding a CapEx account, that you're doing things like that to make sure that you have money if a tenant does break things, so that you're not kind of left holding the bag on that. So those are all important facets to absolutely keep in mind. But again, you know, you don't need to check the value. Like, the value doesn't matter if you're going to own it for 20 years, in my opinion, as long as you're able to continue to rent it. That's the most important thing. And when it comes to interest rates, I do think as rates rise, it could have an impact on value, certainly, and especially if they rise quickly, like you talked about. But the one thing also you got to keep in mind, the Fed fund rate impacts treasuries more than anything. And the deficit, they just announced, I think this morning, and it's like $3.1 trillion. Now, most of this is because they're funding all the stimulus for you know, a 100-year pandemic, right? So, like, not trying to criticize the government in any way for that, but it negatively impacts the government in a lot of ways if they raise rates. So there probably is going to be some, I know the Fed's supposed to not be political, right? But, you know, we can argue that till we're blue in the face, but they probably hold rates low because there's going to be a lot of political pressure to do that, unless we see inflation, which, you know, that's another topic, is you got a $3.1 trillion deficit. So at some point you got to see some inflation. But that's another place that if you have inflation, even if rates rise, whatever the inflation is with the rise in rates should buoy out your investment in real estate. So I completely agree with you. I'm, you know, first thing that needs to be admitted is I'm biased in real estate because I'm heavily invested in real estate.
Yeah.
But yeah, you have to be wise on your investments and kind of see these different facets. But I think with rates being where they are, where you can lock in cheap 30-year money or 15 or 20, whatever you want to do, if inflation does come, it'll help values. And then, but you absolutely have to be confident that you're going to be able to rent the property, because that's the most important thing. Because if you can't, then you shouldn't buy it.
Let's take a quick break from today's episode to hear from our show sponsors. Hey everybody, how's it going? This is Mike Cav with Average Joe Finances. You know, we're living in some pretty tough times right now. And if you don't have life insurance, you should probably get it. You need to protect yourself, protect your family, and protect what you own. Check out the link below in the show notes or in the video description. Hey, what's going on everybody? It's Mike Cav from Average Joe Finances. Just want to talk to you today about Prep Agent. If you're interested in learning how to become a real estate agent and being able to pass the test on your first try, check out Prep Agent at www.prepagent.com. Use code AVGJOE, that's Average Joe, AVGJOE, to get an additional 20% off.
You're listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast. Whether it's single or multifamily real estate, the stock market, or side hustles, we discuss it all. Strap in and enjoy the ride.
Welcome back, everybody. Let's get back into it. You know, I take notes as we're going along here. And one of the things you were talking about, and I'm kind of rewinding back a little bit because we've been going off on little tangents. And trust me, I love it because...
Yeah, that's, you know, me in a nutshell. Tangent.
Hey, that's awesome because, you know, just going back and forth and just, you know, just making this very conversational. It, you know, yeah. I'm very comfortable speaking with you, and I feel like it's, you know, just... two dudes having a conversation about real estate and financing. So I
absolutely
love it.
We just need coffee.
I just finished my coffee and now I'm drinking
I'm
water.
I'm on water because it's
got the water now. Yeah. So, well, it's only 10:49 here in the morning in Hawaii. So it's still coffee time. So one of the things you talked about is, so your wife and yourself, you had a job to pay for your lifestyle, right? And you used real estate to build wealth. Yep. And one of the things I want to talk about, because this is something I've mentioned in the past, is that you can invest in any other asset class that you want to, but if you're looking to build your net worth and safely and somewhat quickly, I mean, real estate is a slow rolling game, right? Depending on how many properties you acquire, but the quickest way to build your net worth is through real estate. I firmly believe that, right? So between the properties that I've purchased and just having other people pay my mortgages down for me, and then of course my primary residence here in Hawaii, that's what's actually putting my back end, you know, my net worth, that's what's actually growing it. And every month it goes up as these principles come down. I think that's awesome, right? So, you know, your lifestyle is paid for by your job and then your real estate to build your wealth. So I wanted to point that out because, you know, for the people that think real estate is not a good way to go. I've seen some people complaining online recently about, you know, well, what if you have nightmare tenants, or what if you have this, what if you have that, you have repairs, this and that. You have to account for all that stuff, obviously, right? You don't want to just go into buying properties and not doing your research or homework on it, because that's when you're going to run into that. But the beautiful part about having rental properties is you can screen your tenants and you can make these requirements, you know, that this is the credit score, you know, this is the minimum credit score. This, you need to make, you know, 3.5 times what the rent is, whatever your minimum requirements are, right? So you can make that happen. It's just a matter of you as the investor doing your due diligence and not just throwing your cash out there and throwing it into something. That's like saying, that's like a, you know, a stock market investor just running out and buying penny stocks all day and crossing their fingers. You know, 90% of penny stocks fail. That's just something to keep in mind. One of the other things that I appreciate that you do, especially being a loan officer, is that, you know, you understand how to be creative with financing because you're an investor as well. So I think it's very important for anybody that's out there that when you're investing in real estate, that one, you're dealing with a lender that knows investors because they invest themselves, and that you also have a real estate agent that's also an investor. There's a different caliber of somebody who's also an investor, right? So somebody that understands investors. So I just want to throw that out there. It's important that you have you build the right team, right? And that comes to everything with property management, with your general contractors that you use. Building a team is so important.
I'm going to rewind back a little bit more. I want to go back to the house hacking, right? Okay. So again, back to the renting out rooms, because this is something I realized. I had a buddy of mine that lived out here and he was renting a room from somebody for $800 a month. I've seen rooms out here in Hawaii renting between $8 and $1,200 a month, right, for the room. So if you buy a big enough house out here in Hawaii at the right price, you yeah. can rent out three of the rooms just like you were doing and have it pay your mortgage. You know, as long as you're in the right area, which there's not many areas out here on Oahu that is not a good area to do this. I think that's phenomenal. And I'm brainstorming here, just looking at my notes with all the stuff that we've been talking about. Now, I want to, again, rewind a little bit more and go back into your partnership that you have with your partner, right? So when you sold the landscape business and then started the real estate investing business, now you're 50-50 across the board, right?
Correct. Yeah. We've maintained 50-50 just the entire time. Never wanted to muddy the water. So if there was ever a capital call or a capital need, we'd either put in the same amount of money or we've actually structured it sometimes where there'd be times where he had money for a project and I didn't, and he would actually loan the money to the business. So we always set it up in a way to where we can maintain that 50%. And then, you know, if there is a, especially on the flipping side of the business, is what, you know, there we'd get into projects and we'd be short $20,000 or whatever the number is, and so then one of us would come in and lend the money or both of us, and so we've structured it a bunch of different ways to kind of maintain that 50-50, just because for me and him, as long as we've known each other, never really wanted to get anything different than that. So continue to own it 50-50.
Well, I asked that because I'm interested. I'm actually looking at doing some partnerships here soon myself, and yeah. I see like some people that they, you know, it just depends on how you do it. You know, do you guys split up the duties? Like, or do you have one person who's essentially mostly like the operator and the other person who's mostly working the finance piece? And I'm pretty sure if there's somebody who's working just the finance piece, it's probably you. But,
yeah.
You know, how do you guys split up the actual duties of the job? Not just the cash, but the duties.
Yeah. So we, the cash, I'll answer the cash questions first because that's the easiest, mm-hmm. is it all hits that account and we build a large capital account, and he's actually a real estate agent and I'm a loan officer, figure that out.
There and, you go. You got the dream team right there.
Exactly. And so, you know, we build cash in a capital account and then we'll occasionally pay out dividends, right? Because neither one of us is looking at that business for the consistent monthly cash flow, right? Because that's, again, it sits in that wealth column for both of us. And so, you know, but occasionally we will take money out or take dividends if, you know, if we hit certain targets. But yes, over time, it kind of happened naturally with us just because of how long we've worked together. But I would, if you're going to get into a partnership, I think it's important to define the roles, but then also know that those roles can be flexible, right? So
right.
for the most part, I am the operations person who's going to, you know, talk to tenants, or on the short-term side, I'm the one responding to the inquiries about people that want to rent the property or not. I typically coordinate with the cleaners. I manage all the financing side of the business with the bookkeeping and stuff.
So you essentially do all the property management.
I do. Yeah. In a lot of ways. Well, no, I would say I do the virtual property management. He does like if it comes to meeting a contractor, he's way more likely to go meet the contractor than I am. It's like, typically he's the one that's going to meet somebody out there to, like, for instance, we had batteries dying in one of the electronic locks the other day, and he drove out there and replaced the batteries, and, you know, and he'll deal with contractors, call contractors. He does a lot as well on that side, but I would say he's more of the things that can be done from the phone or the computer is more my wheelhouse. Things that are, you know, you need to go out to the property and meet somebody or make a decision on something, that's more him. I always, you know, we don't really have defined roles, but I would say I'm more like the CFO, COO, and he's more the CEO, and he's more decisive than I am in a lot of ways, to where, you know, I can present things to him. I say this about our family real estate business as well, where Lauren's the CEO, because I kind of present all the options and then I give my opinion and then let them kind of decide on it, because they're a little bit more decisive than I am. But yeah, we kind of split up the roles. So anybody that's going to get into a partnership, you have to define the roles on the front end. I think that's very important, even though in my case, we kind of grew into them but that was just because we didn't know what the hell we were doing when we started.
Yeah.
But yeah, define those roles on the front end. But then the number one death of a partnership, because I've seen it too many times, just through like the little bit of consulting that I've done with some small businesses, is when you get into the tit for tat. So if you're thinking about joining a partnership with anybody, you have to, you personally have to mentally prepare to not hold that scorecard. And you have to have a conversation with the other person to make sure that they're willing to not do it either. Because if you get into the game of, well, I returned that phone call and I met that person, but you didn't do this and I did that, then you're dead. You're going to die. You have to be willing to know that there's going to be months that you're going to do more than the other person because they have XYZ going on. And then there's other months that they're going to do more than you because you have XYZ going on. And so it has to be that true relationship, if you will. And obviously every business is different. So, you know, some things need different aspects. But I think from what I've seen over the years, that tit for tack is going to kill not only any partnership, business partnership, but it'll kill a lot of relationships too.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's actually a phenomenal point because, you know, having that relationship, you know, be at that level to where you're not, it's the same thing in marriage, right? Like, you know, with your partner in marriage, you can't sit there and be like, I mopped the floors today and I did the dishes, you know, and I worked all day, you know, and you can't do that. Cause then that just starts an argument that for no reason. But it's funny because, so with my partnership, with my rental property business too, my wife, and it's funny because, you know, I run Average Joe Finances, right?
Yeah.
And when it comes to our rental properties, she's actually more of the CFO and the COO because she is the one doing the most of the research on the properties. She's the one, you know, crunching the numbers and looking at stuff. And then I look at everything and say, hey, we should probably, you know, go for this or make this deal or whatever. So I think that's pretty awesome. So just having those defined roles, but you know, the way you pointed out how it's important to not have that scorecard, that's almost like saying, you know, you have a whiteboard up and you're marking off everything that, you know, you did this month and, oh, well, my partner hasn't done squat this month. And I'm going to call him up and tell him, you know, what's up, man? Well, you know, how come you're not holding up your end here? And, you know, I should get more money now because I did all the work. Yeah, that's very important. And I definitely appreciate that perspective.
You want to kill a marriage fast, keep a scorecard.
Yeah, right. especially after kids.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially after kids.
Yeah,
I woke up last night and you didn't.
Yeah. No, yeah, we never got into the whole how many diapers have you changed today?
Right.
Yeah, argument because, you know, it's just
you're going to lose because us as the husbands are going to lose on
100% every time. So, awesome. So, I want to go back into like some of the questions I like to ask with everything that we've been talking about, you know, since you started your businesses and also doing the loan officer thing, can you tell me what you enjoy about the entirety of everything that you do? What's your favorite thing to do?
My favorite thing to do is to help people and give advice. I feel like I maybe missed a calling to be a teacher of some kind. I really enjoy teaching people things. It's part of the reason why I've begun to get into, you know, like being on your show, for instance, is really out of a desire to try to share things that I have learned over the years, right? I love working as a loan officer. Probably my favorite thing to do is working with first-time homebuyers. Like sometimes they can be very frustrating, but other times it's very rewarding when I get off a pre-approval call and they're like, I didn't know any of this. And I feel comfortable moving forward on XYZ now, right? So that's probably my core is I really enjoy that. I also really enjoy the real estate side of things. Providing people housing, I think is important, right? And I'm able to accomplish certain goals with it that, you know, as an investment class, real estate is my favorite. There's really no doubt about it. And it shows with how I invest it, you know, real estate makes up probably 60 or 65% of my net worth. And there's a reason for that. And it's because I like it the most. But I think there's also some power to providing housing for people, right? Like I have a property with our family holding company where we put it on the market and it'd been on the market for like 3 days. And I got a call from a guy. He's a veteran out of the Marines. And he was straight up with me. And he was like, look, if you run my background, my credit's terrible. This is why I went through a nasty divorce, blah, 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 blah. He had this story, right? And I was like, well, let's meet at the property. And we went and we met, and I talked with him for a while, and I ended up leasing the property to him. I didn't even pull his credit because he was so open about it. And he lived there. This is his last month, and he's ultimately moving to a different city, but he's been a great tenant. And so that gave me a lot of personal, I guess, gratitude, or, enjoyment. I'm at a loss for the word, but by providing housing for him when he couldn't get it from a standard apartment because of things that had happened in his past and he needed housing. So, I think, a lot of times people want to look at landlords as like the villain, but like for the most part, the majority of us are trying to accomplish things financially, but we also have this like deep-seated, desire to kind of help people, in my opinion, and provide quality housing for a lot of people. And so that's the other side of it that I like. And then I also played the game, as stupid as this sounds, I played the game Monopoly all the time with my sister growing up. And so I think it's just like ingrained in my brain from age 5 on that like you buy 4 houses and you buy a hotel. Like I don't know.
I think the word you were looking for is self-gratification, right?
Yes, you nailed it.
You get that gratification of being able to help other people. And I'm going to put you on the spot here and ask you this, since you're a plethora of information and you got a lot of data in your brain, right? I really enjoy speaking with you, but why not start your own podcast in the future? Have you ever considered that?
I probably need to. I have this, me and my mentor, I actually still work with him. His name is Adam Rhodes. And we do a Friday video sporadically. We were doing it every Friday during the pandemic, and we posted on Facebook, and it's exactly what we're doing. It was on Zoom and we'd record it, and then we'd post it on Facebook, and it was just mortgage updates, like what was happening with forbearance. Nice. and all these, cause there was like a 2-month period where the mortgage industry was just, no one knew what the heck was going to happen. Rates were bouncing all over the place. It was kind of crazy. And then the Fed stepped in and helped. But so we did do that. And then that kind of prompted my sister. That's why I'm on the call right now. So Sarah, who contacted you, that's my sister. And she works for another gentleman and helps him, grow his sphere and get on things like that. And so that's how this all started. She started watching that show and she's like, Eric, you need to start a podcast. You need to be guests on podcasts. That's kind of how all this came about. And I like to make the excuse that I don't have time, but we all know that the time thing is just an excuse. So yeah, maybe I should.
Yeah. Hey, just something to consider in the future. So I actually recently just started going on podcasts as well. So I've been on 2 so far. I plan on doing some more. And trust me, when it comes to the, I don't have time, I feel that spiritually because I do. I say that all the time. I don't have time for this. I don't have time for that. And then when I make the time to do it, and I was telling you this, off of recording, right before we got on our call, I was on a Zoom call watching a good friend of mine get married. So back in Virginia, which was really awesome. And I was almost nervous that I wasn't going to be able to have this call with you because it was running a little bit late, and everything worked out. And I was done with that at 9:58, and we were able to start our call at 10 o'clock. So, So it worked out really well. So
I think that time thing is interesting. This is me going down the rabbit hole. I'm sorry, but for the longest time, I always made the I can't work out. And I've always been a tad overweight. What's interesting is your spouses have these ways of like pulling bullshit out of you, where ultimately Lauren was like, look, stop complaining about being overweight if you're not going to do anything about it. And so then she like signed me up for this Peloton chat. We have a Peloton. She Nice. Rides it all the time. So she signed me up for this Peloton challenge. And I was like, I don't have time for this. They're 45 minute rides. When am I going to ride it for 45 minutes? And so anyways, this is week 8. It's three workouts a week. And every single week I've hit my 3 workouts. So it's like, I just needed someone to be like, no, Eric, that's an excuse. Yep. And I did a workout last night at like 10 o'clock. And so, sometimes if you get held to do it, you got to do it. Right, man.
Yeah,
and
it's absolutely,
I think the time thing is such an excuse, because if you truly want to do it, you'll find time.
Hey, you know what though? I want to say congratulations on doing that and forcing yourself to do it, because again, that's changing that, you're changing your mindset when you're doing it that way, when you force yourself to do it. Trust me, there's days that I get up and I'm like, there's no way I'm working out today. And actually those are the days that when I do work out, especially when I didn't want to at all, that I feel the best when I'm done. So
definitely.
And my wife made me start doing yoga again recently. And I realized how non-flexible I was. I used to do it a lot, but
yeah.
So now I'm doing yoga on the weekends with her. So it,
I'll tell you what, the yoga thing. And I know I'm told you I'm notorious for this rabbit hole game, but the yoga thing is really, I have started to really like yoga, and this is going to be funny. So my daughter is about to be 3 years old, and we took away the Baba or the Passy, and we're trying to get her to go to sleep, and we're having a hard time with it. And Lauren, my wife, got a book, and it's Child's Yoga. And so like most nights, me and her will go in there and we'll do like 5 minutes of yoga with my daughter and do these different poses and like breathing and supposed to help her calm down and get ready for bed. And it's mixed results on actually getting her to go to bed. But I have found it very rewarding to just be for 5-10 minutes, whatever it is, with Lauren and my daughter doing these poses and breathing. And I probably need to put that on the list of things I need to do more of too. But I actually kind of enjoy yoga for what it's worth.
So yeah, so there's some, I embrace it for sure. So there's actually, and you know, this again, going down the rabbit hole a little bit, but there's some really good children's yoga videos on YouTube that my girls used to do as well. And it's fun and interactive for them. I forget the channel's name, but this lady, she's a British lady, and the way she has her channel set up, like every time she comes out to do it, she's all dressed up and she's got like the cool little background that's, you know, very friendly for children's eyes. Right. So it's very, you know, it's something that will keep them engaged. And I thought it was pretty neat. So those things, while you might think some nights that it doesn't work, or you might think some days it's not working, it does, and it leaves a lasting impression. So definitely appreciate talking about that. A little off topic, but hey, it's all good because, you know, having a well-rounded, you know, life beside, you know, you can't just be all work and
totally,
and you know, and talking finances and real estate all the time. You know, you got to take everything into perspective. And one of the things I talk about on my channel a lot too is financial health, of course, but also your mental health and your physical health. All of that is all very important in your life journey, right? And if you have all those three things, you know, where they're supposed to be, nobody can touch you. You're in a good spot.
Well, you nailed it. Why build wealth if you don't enjoy your life, right? I mean, like, who cares about the wealth if you're not going to enjoy your time here?
Right? Yeah, I mean, who cares about the wealth if you don't have the health, right?
If you don't have
the health to enjoy the wealth, what's the point? If you're going to sit here and work yourself to death, and then, you know, you leave this world and, you know, all your kids know was, well, my dad made a lot of money and, you know, I'm set for life now. So that's cool, but wish we could have hung out more.
Yeah.
So I try to focus on that because I do realize sometimes like there's some days, you know, I come home from work and I'm like, oh, I gotta do some video editing and this and that. And then my youngest daughter will come up and tap me on the shoulder and be like, Daddy, will you watch a show with me? Yeah. Let me stop what I'm doing. Yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, or, hey, can you read me a story, or can we go for a bike ride? So little things like that grant you, I guess, you know, life points, right? There it gets you so many more points with your children and with your family. So definitely think that stuff's important.
Yeah. I have a saying called you always have 2 minutes. And so this was about 6 months ago, 7 months ago that I started saying this, but so we dealing with toddler behavior, and we've started to give my daughter timers, right? So it's like, hey, I know we're playing in the living room, but we're going to eat lunch. So I'm going to set a timer for 2 minutes. And after the 2 minutes, we're going to go eat lunch. So we started doing this for so many different things, bath time, bedtime, all these different, you know, to kind of help her cope with the next step of the day. Anyway, so she picked up on this. And so if I'm in the middle of doing something, or if I leave my office and I'm going to get a drink of water, she'll say, Dad, will you play with me? And, you know, for the most part, it's like, no, sweetie, I'm in the middle of something. I need to go do this. But she started saying, just for 2 minutes. Daddy, will you play with me just for 2 minutes? And the first time she said it, just like you said, it's like, absolutely. Like what am I going to say? I'm going to tell my 2.5-year-old daughter that I'm not going to play with her for 2 minutes. There's nothing that's that important that I can't go play with her for 2 minutes. So it kind of grew in my brain on that concept where it's, I always have 2 minutes to play with her. Right. And, you know, always is an aggressive word, but for the most part, I have 2 minutes to play with her if she asks. But then you expand that to like, you always have 2 minutes to help somebody out, right? If you're in your office or you're in your workplace and you know somebody's down or, you know, upset or something, you always have 2 minutes to go out of your way to help somebody or interject and make a comment or whatever. And so that's something that I've been saying recently. You always have 2 minutes. I think it's important to keep it in mind. You know, if you're driving on the road and someone's on the side of the road, maybe that's not 2 minutes, maybe it's 15, but stop. You're going to get more out of it than you put in. I can guarantee it.
Absolutely. I totally believe in karma and all that. Yeah. You know, what you put out there in the world is, you know, it comes back to you tenfold. So whether it's good or bad, right? So,
right.
Exactly. No, that's awesome. I think we touched on a lot of things, you know, just besides just talking about real estate, just, you know, your journey, you know, in building your wealth and getting yourself to a good spot to be financially independent has definitely been a very strong journey. You know, you guys are doing good things. I mean, the way you built your partnerships and the way you built your businesses and then how you invest in real estate is awesome. I like the way you split your 50-50 on the assets that you have. I think that's a very safe way to do things, but at the same time, still get yourself to a point where you're building your net worth, you're building your wealth, and you're having a good positive cash flow. And of course, reinvesting that back into the real estate, I mean, that's the way to go, right? You still have your day job to pay for your lifestyle. So why not keep building up the real estate, right? So yeah. I definitely think that's a great way to look at things. You know, a lot of people think they should just quit their job and do this full time. And you absolutely 100% can. If you're able to do it right now while you're working and do some real estate investing on the side, it's going to pay back tenfold because you can still live your life and still build that wealth so that when, you know, if you want to do that for 5 to 10 years and then get out and be a full-time real estate investor, I mean, you're setting yourself up for greater success. So
there's definitely some takes on that. I mean, like you're spot on that you absolutely can do it, but I think there's other ways to go about it that maybe reduces your risk some, right? Like if you hate your job and so that's why you want to do it, maybe just try to find a different job that allows you more flexibility. Cause that's how I got into becoming a loan officer. Is I started working at the bank as a banker. And I said it, and I'll continue to say it, it's the worst job on planet Earth. It's 9 to 5. People come in. No one goes to the bank anymore because they're happy. And so it was terrible. And I was like, I can't do this. And then got this opportunity to go to commission-only sales in real estate that I was already, you know, working in. And I have ultimate flexibility to kind of work from where I need to work, make my own hours and stuff. And that becomes a bit of a curse because you're always, you know, you on the real estate side know this, that, you know, if a client needs you, you got to be available. It's hard to turn it off. Right. And so there's boundaries there too, but I think there's other way to structure it that if you hate your job, just find a different job that's more conducive to the goals that you want to ultimately accomplish while continuing to provide some sort of steady income while you grow wherever it is, or make an agreement with your spouse, right? Where for many years, Lauren was a school teacher and I was doing mortgages. And so we were less concerned about whether I had good or bad sales months because Lauren's salary covered the vast majority of our monthly expenses.
Right.
So we didn't have to worry as much about, well, Eric had a down month, so we, you know, can't go out to eat or, you know, whatever the answer is.
Yeah. Same reason why I'm pushing out my time and I'm going to retire from the Navy. So when I get that pension for the rest of my life and, you know, between that and some other things I have, I'm not going to be the guy who's chasing a commission. Even if there's like a month that I'm not able to sell a home or anything like that, like it's going to be okay. I think that's important that you have some type of set of either passive income or, you know, another job to do this stuff. So for me, like right now, I'm not taking on clients as a real estate agent. I'm just doing referrals and I'm getting, you know, my commission based off of the referrals that I give to other agents. I feel like at this point, because I work a lot of hours right now while I'm still in the Navy. And I just feel like it wouldn't be fair to take on clients and not be able to dedicate, you know, time to them when they're going to need me. So yeah, so that's a great perspective. So Eric, I want to kind of just move into just if there's anything else that you would like to add to this conversation with everything that we've talked about, any more little pieces or golden nuggets that you have for us.
We got to some golden nuggets I didn't even know I had.
So, I love the 2 minute thing. There's always time for 2 minutes.
Two-minute thing is new. I mean, that's awesome. I really enjoy that.
You should write a book on that.
Yeah, maybe.
There's always 2 minutes. I like it.
Do a lot. There you go. And, you know, we talked about low interest rates. We talked about the opportunity for especially first-time homebuyers. And I don't know if I can reiterate that enough. I think the low interest rates are such a great opportunity for people, again, who don't have any desire to have a real estate portfolio with 20 properties in it, but could see themselves owning one rental property, right? Like you go and buy a new primary residence, live there for 3-4 years. And then if you're in the military, you get restationed, or if you're not, you buy a bigger home because maybe you have kids or whatever the situation is. And now you're in a place where you have dirt cheap interest rates on a 30-year fixed money on an asset that'll ultimately pay for itself. Mm-hmm. If you have a steady income and you're over the age of, I don't know, 20, or maybe even younger, you need to consider buying a house, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Because I think it's just such a huge opportunity. I think that's why we see the market continuing to rise the way it is. And as long as your hold period's long enough, like, you know, if you're going to buy a house and sell it in 2 years, then you got to think a lot harder on that, right? But mm-hmm. if you're going to buy it and your plan is to own it for 20 years, it's hard to see a world where you lose unless you're forced to sell it in the next, you know, housing crisis.
Right. Part of the thing too is having, you know, different exit strategies, but the buy and hold, I mean, it's one of the safest bets out there. So if you're buying a good property and you're able to rent it out and it pays for itself, you know, why not hold it for 20, you know, plus years?
At 2.5%.
Yeah. At 2.5%. Right. While you could have paid the house off earlier. Sure. I get it. But that extra money that you would have put into that, you know, you could have invested elsewhere and made well above 2.5%.
Paying down the house when you're borrowing at 2.5 should be the last thing you do. Yep. Fully fund your retirement account, fund an IRA,
100%,
you know, build a huge cash buffer to, you know, so if you do have a crappy tenant, you can fix up the house. I mean, like, there's so many different things you can do with your cash besides pay off a 2.5% mortgage. And then if you find yourself just swimming in money, then sure, pay down. You know, I'm not against paying down debt. I'm not sitting here advocating everybody go leverage to their teeth, but I don't think we can understate how good of an opportunity, especially for people that don't already own real estate, that exists out there with the low interest rates right now that, you know, I think are going to be low for the foreseeable future, but maybe not this low in the next year.
Yeah. Hey, so Eric, really appreciate it. This has been a great conversation. And where can people find more information about you? Do you have a website? Are you on social media?
Yeah. So emecompanies.com is our website. And then we also have an Instagram, which is EME Companies. And then if you just search my name and North Point Mortgage, you'll find my North Point Mortgage website. And then you can also find me on Facebook, just Eric Engebretson as well. It's probably the best way to find me and get in touch.
So, hey, everybody, there you have it. That's where you can find more information about Eric and what he's doing. We'll make sure we have all the links in the show notes below. Definitely check it out. Visit his sites. And I'm pretty sure if you have any questions for him, you can reach out and he'll be happy to help you. So Eric, absolute pleasure talking with you today. This is, you know, you're very conversational and I really enjoyed everything we talked about.
Yeah, I really appreciate the time. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Average Joe Finances Podcast, your source for beating debt, saving money, and investing. Learn more at averagejoefinances.com.
The Average Joe Finances Podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Do not use this for any real estate or investment making decisions. All views by myself or our guests are solely our own and do not reflect the opinion of our employers.